Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey, Mike, pop quiz. What is the standard go-to method for emergency decon?
That's pretty easy. Wet decon, right?
Well, you know, you're not the only one that may be thinking that, but it's actually dry decon.
No. How many times have I heard dilution is the solution to pollution?
Actually, too many. And that's the issue. Makes sense if you think about it. Without the use of water, we don't need to spend extra time setting up traditional showers or pools, and there's no wastewater afterwards. And you're not going to freeze anybody to death if it's below 60 degrees.
Check out firstlinetech.com/drydecon. Firstline Technology has a whole webpage dedicated to the methodology and links to plenty of dry decon resources. See for yourself why dry decon with FiberTech should be your go-to immediate decon solution.
You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 341. We are going to be chatting a little bit about LNG. No, not 341?
No, it is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I'm sitting going, I can't believe it's 341, man. Yeah. So, listen, conferences are still going. I just came back from Cold Zone. Incredible time with those lads up there, South Dakota, North Dakota, Michigan, Minnesota. And I was in a tornado.
Of course you were.
I was actually within a, what do they say, a hog's breath. You were within a hog's breath of it.
Three ramrods and a hog's breath?
I should put a couple of them on Facebook because I was like, it was incredible. But that wasn't the highlight. The highlight with the people and Cold Zone just wrapped up. That was an amazing time. Baltimore is coming up as quickly as I cannot believe it.
Insanely fast. That's
coming up. June 8th is going to be that. Virginia is going to be September 13th, and then Massachusetts is September 20th. So if you want to mention your conference, or you have a conference that's around you, even if we're not going to be speaking, contact Kosh at thehazmatguys.com for more info. And this gets you on shows like this and newsletter and a few other places for good measure. And lastly, the FDNY shirt locker is still open. Go to FDNYHazmatTheNumber1.com.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the guys that's doing shirt locker stuff, and he was like, we had X amount in sales. And I was like, really? He's like, I can't believe people like, what are they just like, look,
listen
this stuff
to
up?
You.
No. And I'm like, no, you know, we push the shirt locker on every episode since we've started the shirt locker, right? He's like, really? I'm like, yeah.
What do you think? Is it magic?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So. Great place to get some FDNY Company 1 memorabilia, shirts, coins, hats.
We got
all sorts of stuff on there. And, yeah, so.
Cool.
Let's get into the topic of the day.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, so we are, with all the different alternative fuels that are out there, right? We've talked extensively about batteries, and we will be talking more about batteries because things are, again, always rapidly evolving and changing, and our tactics are what seemed like they were so great at first. Everybody's kind of like, well, this doesn't make sense anymore. But that's a whole different ball game. Keep listening in. We'll throw out those battery things as we go along. LNG, liquefied natural gas, is it's been around a while. But it has been around more in the terms of facilities, And yes, we're only just now, I don't want to say just now, but it will. There will come a time in the future that vehicles are going to be transporting LNG. They already have highway trucks that run off of LNG.
Dude, we're seeing cruise ships.
Cruise ships, yeah. The maritime industry is huge into LNG right now. I don't know, are they still doing? There was talk at one point of all the ferries in New York City switching over to LNG.
Yes, I believe, and this is pre-COVID, so I don't know if this is a fact anymore, but there was a what they were calling a floating refinery that was going to be parked on the west side of Manhattan, and it was going to fill up all of the cruise ships coming in and the ferries. And then when that cruise, that tanker ship or whatever the hell they call it, was empty, they would drive it out into the sea, and then another one would come in and park, and it would do it again. So that was all greenlit prior to COVID. Like, we were training up on that and doing that stuff. But I don't know if it's still a green light. It could be installed and I wouldn't even know.
Yeah, they could be running it right now, because we don't know until like suddenly there's a leak. And then they're like, well, you guys can deal with this, right? And we're like, we didn't even know you existed.
Who are you?
So that's kind of the point. The point is to kind of chat a little bit about it, because there's some interesting things with LNG that are, they're obviously very similar to cryogenics, sort of similar to propane, you know, in the liquefied form. Mm-hmm. But when we start talking about firefighting tactics and how to proceed and what to do and what not to do, it starts to become a little complex. And we're not going to dive hugely deep into that in this episode, but we definitely want to just give like some basic chemical physical properties about LNG. How does it differ from CNG? How could we possibly see this in an accident form? And what are the kind of the basic types of fires that we would end up seeing coming from an LNG accident, because there are different fires, there's different types of hazards. And that's kind of, that's kind of what we're looking to do right now.
I think one of the things, and I never understood it. I kind of understand it, but I never understood really why there was such a clutch to it, is the words natural gas. Like, either in compressed or liquefied, but the point is it's freaking methane.
Yes.
Right? So, okay, I got it. Methane stinks. It smells like sulfur. It doesn't smell like sulfur. It smells like farts. We'll say that, right? And, okay, like, it smells like, I don't know. I don't even know what the hell you call it. What does that smell? It smells like methane. I don't know.
Mercaptan.
Yeah, like, is that what they're kind of coming up to? Maybe this is like a little bit ignorant, but I never really, when you put the molecules together, is it now because of this mixture, is it now natural gas? Is this like gasoline, where gasoline is a true chemical and then you add all these other things, but we still call it gasoline?
No, honest to God, from what I can tell in doing the research, natural gas is mostly methane.
Right.
It is mostly methane. It will have, however, right, because they're not doing like major, they're not going to dump major money into refining methane to produce just pure methane. So there are other chemicals in there. There's going to be like butanes and ethanes, and you know, it's like, Bob, you do allegedly you make your own bourbon.
Maybe an old guy.
And you distill it, right?
Yes.
And you only have to distill it one time, and then you can just go ahead and drink that liquid.
Yeah, the process.
Or do you distill multiple times?
You can do multiple times, but you only really need to do one if you do it right. But the process, though, I know where you're going with this, is that it's called fractional distillation. And so there's different boiling points, and that's actually how the process works. So the first thing to come off is the methanol has the lowest boiling point.
Right.
And then the ethanol, and then all the other crap that you don't want. And so if you catch it in that right time zone, then you can catch this thing. And so that's kind of how this thing works as well.
Right. Only they're not going to refine it to the point that it's just strictly methane. They're going to be like, all right, like these contaminants, these ethanes, these butanes, these propanes, like the other kind of mix is there. It doesn't really affect, like, I'm heating my stove. So it doesn't really matter that there's a slight.
I'm not doing damage. Land projects.
Right. I'm not. And you know what? Maybe in areas that they're using natural gas for chemical reactions and things like that, a little bit different. But I think we're pretty much just talking about like engine combustion at this point. And we're really not going to see that huge of a difference in firefighting between methane and natural gas. It's pretty well similar.
I agree with you. I just want to, you know, because like in hiking and stuff like that, they give you like butane, like that's the cooking cartridge,
right?
But the problem is like, and I don't remember the exact number, but I remember like butane. You can get it so cold that you can't use it at like 20 degrees out. And so what they'll do is they'll add a little bit of propane on it to change the boiling point, to depress the numbers and modify it in order for it to be usable at 13 degrees. Mm. And so I think that's a lot of what's happening in this one as well.
Yeah. So the CNG is really just our normal natural gas that has been compressed and cooled into a liquid form. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about cryogenics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, and one of the things that we said during the cryogenics lecture or show is that, listen, like you have now two different harms, right? You have the natural harm of the chemical, mm-hmm. and then you have the natural harm of the physics of the liquefied product vaporizing and expansion ratios and all that other stuff. So really, we can look at this as a dual response, right? We want to look at the cryogenic effects. We also want to look at the effects of the natural gas itself. So when we're looking at that, whenever we start talking about cryogenics, right, one of the things that we instantly start to think about is that expansion ratio, because that expansion ratio drives the physics behind what this product is going to do. And the expansion ratio for LNG is 600 to 1, which is pretty high, right? And if you then turn around and you look at not just the expansion ratio of that, but you look at the molecule itself, methane is one of our smallest, it is actually our smallest hydrocarbon compound, right? CH4.
Right.
So it's a very, very light molecule. It is lighter than air at normal pressure and temperature, right?
Yes.
I say that because vapors coming off of super cooled liquids can sink before they're cold. Right. They sink before they rise. Hopefully you guys out there understand that. But it also means that it takes very little energy to go from the liquid state to the gaseous state. Like there's not a huge input of energy needed to do that. Whereas if you look at propane, which has a few more carbon molecules, you need to be adding a little bit more energy to it before we get it to vaporize.
Which the air has an abundant amount.
Right.
Right. It's not like you're like, oh, maybe we got it, maybe we don't. You're very likely going to have enough enthalpy to do it.
Yes.
Naturally.
Right. Just the normal air in and of itself. And when we were looking, you know, when we're doing the research on this, there was something that we came across that I never would have even thought of, because it just is not something that I think I would have thought not to do. And we talked about the various fires that it could be. One of the fires that we should be training for is what's called a pool fire. Hmm. So basically the idea is you have some kind of a container. Let's say we had a truck that was driving down the road and it got involved in an accident and it just dumped out all of the LNG onto the road. And it's sitting there and you're going to naturally have some kind of a pool left over. If you were to take water and apply it to that pool, whether it was not on fire or on fire, you are going to create a massive, it will look like a small blevy,
like but a with cloud.
Like a huge cloud, like a huge whoosh, because the water is carrying so much heat energy that when it is applied to the cryogenic, when it's applied to the LNG, it is instantly able to convert a lot of that liquid over to gas. And with a 600 to 1 expansion ratio, it's going to expand out with a tremendous amount of pressure.
Right.
Not enough to, you know, there's going to be a whoosh, but now there's two things that we got to think about. Let's say there is a fire. We just created a massive fireball. Mm-hmm. And let's say there's not a fire. What are the chances with a 600-to-1 ratio that we're going to expand that gas cloud out far enough to find a source of ignition?
We take the ridiculous, it's almost cartoonish properties of water so matter-of-factly, because the heat transfer capability, what is it? The cryogenic definition is 600-to-1 or greater, and then it's also got to be minus 130 F or less in order to be a cryogenic by definition.
I believe something around there, yeah.
Right?
Really, really cold.
And the only reason that water isn't a cryogenic is because it's not minus 130. But the expansion ratio is like 1,700-to-1.
Yeah, it's huge.
So ridiculous.
It's why steam was used to drive locomotives and engines and things like that, because you take a little bit of steam and you can produce a tremendous amount of power. There is, because of the way the bonds are, because of the properties of the water, water can hold on to a tremendous amount of energy. It can transfer and absorb a tremendous amount of energy, and it can expand like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I know we said we're going to do water one, but I really got to put that together. That's an impressive one.
Yeah, no, but water. Yeah, neither here nor there.
Yeah. Anyway, so the main four types of fires, and again, this is a small point, but it's an important point, and I usually point this out with like wood. It's like if you have a campfire and you hold a piece of wood up like horizontally, if you can't see what we're doing, then you're obviously not a subscriber. But if you hold the piece of wood up on the side and you're looking at it, you will see a small space between the actual physical wood and the start of the flame.
Right.
And what you're looking at is the UEL. And the point of it is that liquid, this is true fact for anything. The actual substance, liquid or solid, never burns.
Right.
It's the vapors that are coming off after mixed in the proper proportion that will. And that's why there's a space. So you cannot have an actual liquefied natural gas fire. Okay.
Right.
But you can have the vapors of that liquefied natural gas go on fire.
Yes.
Small point, but tremendous in scope.
Right. Because now you're looking at two things, right? Like you have this spilt out, you have a spilt out puddle, right? One of the types of emergencies with LNG is going to be the pooling. So you have this spilt out puddle. What do you do? Like, do you apply water in the idea of, oh, I'm going to go ahead and boil all of this off? And if you did that, yes, I want LNG to become a gas. I really do, because if you look at the chemical physical properties, listen, a gas leak outside is not a big deal to me, right? Because it's going to just rise up and dissipate. But at the same time, I don't know if I want to take, you know, if I took, I don't know, let's say it was a 50-gallon pool and suddenly turn it into a 3,500-gallon vapor cloud, I don't necessarily know that that's the direction that I would want to go.
Right. Right. And the other thing is, like, I kind of control what's happening now. And then if you go throw some water on this thing and it ramps up much faster than you can control, you know, my ignition source is now an issue.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know if I think the beauty of this one is, and you got to take your little blessings when you can get them, is of, and this is an incredible statistic, is that of all the chemicals, all of them in the world, there's billions and billions of freaking chemicals out there. 13 go up. This is one of them.
Yeah.
So let it alone. It will take care of itself.
If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of Hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more Hazmat goodness. Yeah, and there is you're almost sounding like a non-intervention policy with just leave it be. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. And to some degree, too, I think we need to be thinking along those lines of, you know, if that pool is on fire, because the LNG is going to vaporize relatively quickly. It's gonna flash relatively quickly. It's gonna burn until it's out. There's very little, you know, when you have a pool of fire, there's very little you can do to actually put that fire out. If you apply water to it, you've just created a massive vapor cloud, and now you're gonna have a whoosh, and now you're gonna have heat, I don't know if it's something that is would really be thought of that much, but the amount of radiant heat that would come off of a massive 600-to-1 pool expansion would probably be enough to cause severe burns at a really good distance.
Yeah, I totally can see that, because it would be such a ramp up of temperature. It would be like you're standing next to the sun. I don't even think that would do it justice.
No, I think that whoosh would really, you would produce some serious, not radiation, like as in like, you know, neutron and gamma, but, you know, radiant heat burns from quite a distance. So you're actually taking, to your point that you said before, you would be taking the situation, this pool that is burning itself out, and now you're making it out of control.
Right.
So,
right. But the saving grace would be that flash fire, although it's not truly a flash fire, it would actually be a fire, because there is a little bit of difference there, but not to get in that. The duration of the fire would be kind of small, because there would be a finite amount of pool, finite amount of gas in the air, in concentration in air. And once it's consumed, it's basically gone.
It's gone.
So what I'm saying is the duration of the fire cycle would be kind of small.
Right. Yeah, because it will burn relatively quickly. The pooling itself, I would almost venture to say that you are better off if we have responded to the scene and there was a pool of liquefied natural gas, surround it, you know, like isolate the area and let it evaporate off. I don't think there's really much that we would do in terms of mitigation of an LNG leak.
No, I would just let it be. And like, you know, downrange, you know, obviously wind would be a consideration or something like that, but the wind is actually kind of helping me distribute it a little bit better. But it is putting a little bit of a horizontal aspect to something I want to go truly vertical. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to go up and away.
Right.
But when I think wind would be actually a little bit more helpful than anything.
The wind?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think the wind would be a little helpful for me, because it's going to provide evaporation. It's going to carry the product away in its gaseous form. Because like if something creates a cooling cloud above it, right? Let's say you have a puddle of this stuff and you have this big cooling cloud above it. Well, that cooling cloud kind of cools. It puts a blanket on the already cold liquid.
If the air isn't moving.
If the air isn't moving.
If the air isn't moving, right? Like being outside in the wind versus not in the wind.
Not in the wind, right? And if you put your jacket on, we're doing the other side of this whole thing. If you put your jacket on, it's a buffer between the wind and you, and therefore it keeps you warm. Well, if I want to keep cold, I could do the same exact thing. So when you have no wind, that blanket of condensation or vapor is going to keep it cold. With the wind, it's constantly having to build up a new blanket, and it doesn't have the opportunity. So it's good because it's going to go away faster.
Now, with everything that we just talked about, if I had a pool, do you think there's a way to warm that pool up? And this is a total opinion question. Like, we have a giant pool. I wonder if I could take small amounts of water and just slowly apply it to that pool, getting it to vaporize just a little bit quicker. Not like a whole hose line where I'm trying to cause the whole thing just to go crazy, but just enough to like
an extinguisher kind of thing.
Yeah, like maybe just a little squirt here and there, maybe like a light mist, get it to just kind of accelerate the go away process.
Probably. I would think, you know what? I would even consider, and again, I don't know if this is true, and I'm going to get scoffed at with this one, but I would even consider putting in maybe a foam. And not because I'm trying to cap it or anything, but because I'm measuring how much water and the app, I can physically see the water going across it. So I'm using that 93, 96, 97% water composition of it in my favor, because it's percolating through that water. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking outside a little bit, and I would probably think about maybe a little foam roll-on. I don't know if it would work. I'm not using it as a blanket because some people are going to be like, well, obviously the vapor pressure is too high. And it's not.
Oh, yeah, it would blow right through the blanket.
Yeah, it's not my intent. My intent is to ration water application.
Right, so almost control in a very controlled way for non-fires. Like, we're just talking.
For non-fires, I want to vaporize this a little quicker.
The literature all shows that if you have a pool fire and you're looking to put it out, dry chem is the way to go.
Right. But again, when you do dry chem, I would say that if there is, and again, we're talking about fire, if there is hot surrounding surfaces, they have to be cooled. And the cooling aspect of the dry chem is not very effective.
Yeah, it's not effective. It's not effective. So what do you think? Anything changes, you know, we talk about like an LPG cylinder, and we tell people all the time, listen, like LPG, you have a fire, cool the cylinder, don't put the fire out. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're going to have similar thought process? You think we're going to have similar thought process if I arrive on a truck fire and I've got a leak from the tank and the tank is on fire? How do you think we're going to approach that? Do I let it burn? Do I put it out? Because with LPG, we're concerned about, the reason we don't put it out is because the vapors are heavier. They're going to come down. They're going to pool. And I am concerned about it finding an ignition source.
I am looking it up right now because I have in my, that's what I thought. I'm looking it up. So I've seen LPG in a couple different formats. I've seen them in steel applications, and I'm also seeing them in like SCBA fiberglass wrapped tanks.
CNG or LNG?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Yeah. I've seen them in both liquid propane in a fiberglass component. Now, I've seen videos where the liquid propane or liquid natural gas, two different products, just LPG,
okay,
LNG, two different products,
two different products.
So everybody's on the same product, is that you would think, oh my God, they're going to blevy. But what happened was the tank, the fiberglass tank melted, and then it was just a pot of propane. So I don't know how they're mounting these things on trucks, because I have seen the LPG on like UPS and tractor trailers and that kind of stuff where they're where do they got them? They got them on top. and the propane's on the bottom. I don't remember where the hell they got them. But I don't know. I wouldn't be super concerned if it was a composite tank for a Blevy, but I would be concerned if it was a steel.
Well, so, and my question to the industry, and I don't know the answer to this, is if it's an L, I'm thinking if it's an LNG, it would almost have to have the same, a similar property as like a 4L, a DOT 4L, right? Because it's got to keep the product cold to some degree. So it has to have like a thermos property. But then at the same time, it's got to be able to be rugged enough to literally be a tank. You know, so does the cylinder have that same type of thermal property as well as container property that, say, a 4L, other cryogenics would have?
No, the LNG and LPG are kept liquefied by pressure.
By pressure alone, there's no...
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they're... That's a pressurized tank. It's different parameters. I could be wrong, but I'm looking at tanks and they look awfully like... basically the same thing, with the exception of those fiberglass things. Those things just look weird. But I'm looking at steel LPG tanks that are just single jacket type tanks, like a propane tank.
Really? I was under the impression that it did not liquefy until there was
coal
added to it.
I could be wrong, but I'm looking at tanks.
Natural gas is condensed into a liquid at close to atmospheric pressures by cooling it to minus 162 degrees. Maximum transport pressure is set around 4 psi gauge pressure, which is about 1/4 of the atmospheric pressure at sea level. So, yeah, it has to be refrigerated.
So what am I looking at? I'm looking at LPG. What did I put? Oh, Christ. I put LPG. I wonder why I'm looking at the wrong one. Oh, yeah. Look at these tanks. These are all refrigerated. What did you say? Your pressure? That's wrong.
No, cryogenic.
I know. I'm joking. Oh, okay. I'm joking. That was me. I'm looking at the wrong tank. That's why I'm saying the thing. So all of you that were listening to me, you could basically just throw out everything I said for the last 5 minutes because I'm a retard. I'm just looking at these things. Now they have double walls and it's a totally different type of tank. Interesting. I thought that was a pressure setup.
I'm looking at a tank that almost looks like a chlorine one cylinder, stainless steel, but still like that same longitudinal shape.
So
I'm wondering what kind of but in the same regards, right? Like these are not high pressure tanks, so yeah, they can obviously any closed container can blevy, but you know, when you have something like a propane tank that is, you know, that is designed to hold under pressure, it's going to be constructed a little bit heavier, so the pressure gets to build before it blevies. I'm wondering what the working pressure of these tanks are. Like, when do these tanks fail?
Jeez, I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know. We're going to have to find out a little bit more about that. Because I'm looking at these tanks. These are on tractor trailers.
Yeah. Yeah, no, these are the transport, the over the road transportation. So, right, like that begs a question. If these cylinders have been on fire, and what is their relief? I'm going to assume that their pressure relief devices are spring loaded, unlike the CNG, which are the pressure discs. Is there a point in time where these things could fail? Does the pressure relief device always able to keep up with the pressure building in the tank? Will these tanks blevy? Because if there's a fire and they blevy, what is our time frame for being able to approach this vehicle in a safe manner?
I would think that under normal emergencies, it would probably be up to it, but there's going to be times where, you know, grandma drives the family truckster into the side of this thing and reduces the volume of the container so much or compromises the container so much that it cannot burp fast enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got that whole Charles Boyle's Henry law thing working against you because the volume was so reduced so quickly that you're going to overwhelm it. So I don't know. Dude, you know what? That's one of those it depends things. And I hate saying that. But I would have to kind of like eyeball it up and say, okay, my big positive is that I know, given no intervention, this thing's going to take care of itself because it's going to go up and away.
Right. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from this is don't approach it like it's LPG. Approach it like it's LNG.
Right.
And understand that if it's leaking, it's going to go up. If it's on fire and you accidentally put it out, I don't think that's really a huge deal. And that fire taking the fire out of the situation might actually help thermally keep that product in the cylinder longer.
Right. And I would say at all costs, try not to get a fire going, you know, because although it will be done quickly, it's done uncontrollably. I would rather have no fire and a spill that's evaporating and going up.
Yeah.
Because
here's my thought, right? Like I'm looking at these tanks. How many pump offs do we do of diesel saddle tanks that have been damaged because a car, like they nicked the Jersey barrier. They were in an accident. Like literally we go on. Well, I guess before lithium ion batteries came around, dude, I haven't been on I can't even remember the last time I can't remember the last time I pumped off a saddle tank.
It's been a while. It seems like the world stopped driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know.
These tanks are definitely going to be an issue. So we will have hopefully more answers than questions next time. If you guys have any thoughts on responding to one of these tractor trailers that have these tanks, if you guys have policies, if you guys have answers to the questions that we've posed that we don't know yet, feel free to reach out to us.
Well, with that, we'll see you guys next week.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.